the the period between the Old and the New Testament. And what's interesting about it is there's no recorded scriptures that were written during that time. There's a bunch of scriptures written about that time, before it happened and after it's happened. And what we're trying to do is build a foundation. I mean, it's always a legitimate question. Why would you study that? Why would you study in a Bible class something that's not in the Bible? Well, it's in the Bible. I mean, you think about the Old Testament from the very beginning. All the talks, all the genealogies about how long everybody lived. I mean, you know, Methuselah, we don't, what is it, 986 or in that neighborhood. We don't have 986 years worth of his conversations. But there was a lot that went on in that time. So that's what we're trying to approach, is to understand as much as we can how we got here into the New Testament, how we got to a point where Jesus, in fulfillment of God's plan, came to earth, died for us, gave us opportunity for eternal salvation. That's the aim of everything that we do out of here, is to, number one, take ourselves to heaven. Number two, drag as many as we can with us. And number three, educate the world, which leads to dragging as many as we can. So, anyway, we've been going through this. Last week, we started with the Maccabean Revolt. And I'm not sure in the book, we have a book, and it's basically an outline. And actually, the first sentence under the Hasmonean, I keep wanting to say Hasmonean, but that was not correct. Hasmonean. That's the other good thing about having an iPhone. You can ask them how to say it. And I said this last week, and I'll tell you again. My Greek, my Latin, my Spanish, and my English has a Texas accent, so you just have to accept that. But the Hasmonean dynasty, the first thing it says is that the Maccabean revolt period and the Hasmonean the Hasmonean dynasty, that's an arbitrary division. They're the same. They're just a continuation. All of the Hasmoneans were descended from Mattathias and his sons, all the way down to the end of it. So they just briefly to get people who were new. First off, I don't expect anybody to remember all of the details, but I would like for you to understand how we got here. Okay, eventually, it'll all fit into a picture, I trust. Matthias was a priest, and he refused to obey Antigonus, who had decreed that they would be Greek, that they would follow the Greek gods, that they would sacrifice a Greek god, so forth, and he refused. And again, there was a fight. When they say fight in here, that's not just a word. I mean, they fight, but they kill when they fight. And he ended up killing the Syrian captain that was trying to force them to do the sacrifices, and he killed a Jew that volunteered to take his place in doing those sacrifices. Then they went to the hills and fought a revolt. They fought back against the Seleucids, who had taken control of that area. Eventually, after fighting out in outlying areas and just trying to get to following the law, period, they eventually went to the cities, fought against the Seleucids directly, And he called out his followers to be zealous for the law and to follow him. And that's what they did. And they fought. And they fought with a passion and they very fierce fighting. There are fights in there where they were. Did I turn this on? Oh. I look like I'm making a mess. It's Aggie proof. When the green light's on, it's on. Eventually they expanded the war outside or inside just the rural areas. They started going into the cities, took on the Seleucids directly, and a long hit and run fight for a long time. Judas/Judah, like I said, they have Greek names and Hebrew names. Those are close enough that, anyway, he was the one that brought the name of the Maccabee, which meant the hammer. He beat the Seleucids with some trickery, and he attributed it correctly, I think, but he attributed it to God. That God's grace is God's help was what won those battles. He restored the temple, which had been desecrated by Antiochus. Anyway, when Antiochus died, the Seleucid army got called home. They called them back to Syria. And Lysias, I'd use the name so I can keep them straight. We're not going to have a test on this. And in fairness, again, I'm not convinced that any of this has anything to do with salvation or not. I think it does have something to do with understanding how you got to where you can get salvation. But this history is, this is an advanced course. This is an advanced course on how we got there. I don't claim to be an advanced course teacher, but I can read very well ever since first grade. Antiochus died. They called the troops back home. Lysias, who was a general, the head of it at that point in time, head of the country, agreed to grant religious freedom, gave rights to run Judea semi-autonomously, or as they say in Texas, semi-autonomously. And they, as long as they paid tribute, paid taxes to the Seleucid Empire. So why was all this significant? Why did that make any difference? Well, again, Christianity, us, the New Jerusalem, originated from this bunch. It restored religious freedom. The revolt, it got against Antiochus. It restored religious freedom, gave the right for the Jews to practice their own worship of God. I put in my notes originally, according to God's law, but I have to say that the religion they got back to practicing was semi-according to God's law. It was their interpretation of it. And we have lots of writings for this period, but we don't have anything that has been identified as inspired writing. So they were able to practice God's worship according to their understanding of God's word. It established that Hanukkah, we talked about that, as a festival celebration of God's plan. That's, you know, the festival lights and the restoration of the temple and all. It's part of God's plan. Again, laying the foundation. This is how we got here. This is what you got to do. It gave them a symbol. you fight. And when they fight figuratively and militarily. They fight for the faith against overwhelming opposition and oppression. And if you go back and look at what Antiochus and the Syrians and the Greeks too, Alexander, all of them, they were it was a very, very, very vicious fight. Well, they learned to fight for their faith. And it left a hunger for a Messiah. Again, the Jews had a different idea of what the Messiah was to be. They had trouble accepting a king who was not a military or a political leader. And if you remember, Jesus' apostles had that same difficulty. You know, they had trouble. They were looking for a military or a political leader. Jesus was not that. That was not his mission. It goes through Mattathias, and his brother was Jonathan, his brother was Simon. Again, they passed it down the line. Before this, the leadership of and the priest, the high priest, was not hereditary, not directly hereditary or inherited, but it became where it was passed from within that family, within Mattathias' family and the descendants of his descendants. It was passed down. The high priest and they called it ethnarch, ethnarch, which is just means leader of a sect, of a certain group, not king, but they were the leader. And in fact, when you get to the dynasty, which the Hasmonean dynasty ruled Judea within the Seleucid Empire. It was part of the empire. It wasn't totally independent. It was part of it. In fact, it was oppressed significantly at the beginning. But it ruled Judea semi-autonomously from 141 to 116 BC. And then after about 110 BC, with the Seleucid Empire was disintegrating, dying from its own weight, basically, the Jews gained more autonomy and expanded. And they expanded by military conquest into other areas. These other areas eventually would influence who the enemies were and who the allies were. And it influenced how the economy worked, on whether or not the agriculture. Some of the land, I'll tell you a little bit about some of the lands that they conquered during this period and what difference it made. But I don't know if you know the geography around Jerusalem, but it's not rich, fertile ground. I mean, it's a lot of sand and stones, and the closest sea is totally salt. So that's one of the things you have to think about. But they took over some fertile lands. Perea, that's east of Jordan. East is that way, according to that. They east of Jordan, and it's in that area. We talk about it in the Bible, in the Old Testament. There's passages in Joshua, Judges, Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and they talk about beyond the Jordan is the way they would describe it. In New Testament, in John 1:28 for sure, but in other places. That there was Bethany that was described as beyond the Jordan. Okay, Bethany is where John the Baptist was baptizing. That's where Jesus went to be baptized. So, it was also a travel route so he could get around Samaria. So he didn't have to go through Samaria, which was enemy country until they also conquered Samaria, which was the capital of the divided kingdom when it was on, it's on the West Bank. And for those who look at current history, the West Bank is still a thorn in the side of the country of Israel at this point in time. So the Edomia, Edom, was one that they took over. It's the descendants of Esau. It was their land. So again, we go back to the beginning. We can get to where we are now, or where we are at this point in time. Edom actually means, these are little trivia things. These are things that are easier to remember than the names of all these people. But Edom, it means red, reddish. And the soil and the cliffs around there are red. And second, that Esau was reddish. That when he was born, they talked about how he was red. So anyway, that was that. They it's south of Judah, and it borders on the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea, let me back up. I haven't been to all these places not near as much as Curtis has. He's been all the places that I can't say the name of. He can tell you what goes on there. I've been to Israel a couple times, and it was kind of enlightening, or helped me understand what things were really happening, how they were taking place. Okay, the Sea of Galilee. It's a freshwater lake. It's the largest freshwater lake. That's lowest sea level. It's like 700 feet below sea level. That's Galilee. And part of what they captured in this was the land around the Sea of Galilee, up the mountains, up toward Lebanon, the mountains of Lebanon. And it was fresh water. It flows out. The water exits from the Sea of Galilee to the Jordan River. And the Jordan River flows into the Dead Sea. And does anybody know where the water from the Dead Sea exits? Evaporation. And it leaves behind whatever salt was in that water. Again, it is dead. It's really not dead. There's all kinds of microorganisms that can live within salt. But the reason that it's salty, the same reason I guess that the oceans are salty, is what even fresh water that flows in has some solids, has some solids in it. And the water evaporates, comes back, it evaporates as fresh water, goes upstream, falls as fresh water rain, drains down. So over a period of time, it's become a dead sea. Has no outflow. So you get history and geography and meteorology all in the same day. And then Etruria, and that's one that we'll talk about a little bit more in some coming lessons, but that was an area that was Arab. And there were fights, they called Nabataean, but that was Arab. And they had lots of battles there, and they conquered it. They conquered all of those regions. So they brought in more area, more people, better land for agriculture, trade routes. So that influenced the economy of Israel, of Judea, for a long period of time, including today. All the descendants of the Hasmonean dynasty came from Mattathias, and like I said, it became the priesthood and the leader and it goes by different names, and we'll talk about that, but it comes through hereditary through the family. The John Hyrcanus, and I had to listen to see how you say that. It's spelled H-R-Y-C-A-N-U-S. Seems like they should have chose a vowel. I don't know. He was the son of Simon, who was the last of what we considered as the Maccabees. He was like the third son of that. Now, Simon, the one that I said was the last of the Maccabees, Simon was assassinated along with two of his sons, was assassinated by, I think the book said brother-in-law. Everything I could find said it was his son-in-law that assassinated him. But they killed, so Hyrcanus was the third son. And he was assassinated by Ptolemy, who had married Simon's daughter to gain political power. That was part of the very first lesson that we talked about, was different ways that they put the power together, some by marriage, by war, by bribes, by multiple means, but marrying ruling families, that was something that the West adopted at some point in time. The parties under John Hyrcanus, again, that's 135 to 104 BC. We're still 135 years from the birth of Christ. Actually more than that, but 135 plus. And this is the first mention of something that we've talked about in my life for the last 74 years, and in your life, ever how long you've been alive, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And I do encourage you to look at the sources of the origin of these. That part of it is very interesting. And that was the first mention of the parties at this point in time. I think you heard Curtis talk about, he said, well, what were they, Sadducees or Pharisees, in that back in the beginning, when we started talking about Philip II, the Macedon, and all that? And the answer was, there was no such thing. This is when they started having the parties, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Basically, the Pharisees believed, they were Hellenist in parts, but they were tried to be the Hasidim. That we talked about, Hasidic Jews came from that, the strict following of the law, the Torah. Didn't accept other writings, all the what we call apocryphal writings, the Maccabees and some of that. But that they tried to strictly follow the law, or their view of the law. Then Sadducees were more of I would call them more Hellenized, closer to the Greeks. They followed Greek culture a little more. They valued other writings besides the Torah, besides the Hebrew Bible, the Torah. And the Pharisees didn't look to minor prophets, not the books of poetry, not anything except the first five books of the Old Testament. And the Sadducees, nowadays we'd call them more liberal, and they did add to the Torah, and they valued not just those, they valued writings other than the five books. They reached an agreement. The Sadducees, who were more the politicians, more the cultural leaders. They reached an agreement with Syria to get to the semi-autonomy that they were. They, of course, they wanted pure autonomy, but the Seleucids were a lot more powerful than they were. Bigger numbers, more experience, but they also had been engaged in a whole bunch of wars, bunch of them, with different people, all the way to Egypt with the Ptolemies, and they had lost a number. I was reading through here, there was one battle where they lost. They won that battle and they lost 20,000 people. It's not 20,000 people, it's 20,000 men. And sometimes you wonder, you know, why did they practice polygamy? Well, when they were having wars that killed millions, almost was a necessity. Anyway, they reached an agreement with it, and this John Hyrcanus, his people, his followers wanted him to be the king, wanted him to take the title of king. And he said he preferred to be he was high priest. He preferred the title of high priest above king. And he became another one of the ethnarchs. He was a ruler or a leader, but not a king. Never a king, in fact, was his statement. He wants to be he's the high priest, never the king. I took that to be a sign of things to come, that there was a king coming, but it wasn't him. That goes away a little later. He was the son of Simon, back up here. And they did take over this religious and political authority as the ethnarch, not as a king, but as an ethnarch. But he was the high priest and the leader. And this blending of religious authority and civil authority, that's if you're gonna remember anything about the Hasmoneans, that's it. They blended that authority under their rule, under their dynasty. That was the hallmark. If you want to know what they contributed, expansion, and then some semi-autonomy and some freedoms of religion and the ability to practice the religion as God intended for them to. Okay, Aristobulus, 104 to 102 BC, a real short period of time. He was the eldest son of Hyrcanus, and he took the title of king when he became the king, and he was already a high priest, so he took the title of king and high priest. This is where it did get a little interesting. That is, he put his three brothers in jail. There's a whole lot of that through all of these, from the first we started and probably till we get to the end. But there's a palace intrigue over and over again. But he put his three brothers into jail, including Alexander Janaeus, who we'll talk about in a minute, and named his wife as queen. And that'll have some significance in a minute. Anyway, he lived for about a year, a little over a year. And he died without children. So Alexander Janaeus, from 102 to 76 BC, that's in these terms, that was a long rule. To be a ruler that long and not get killed by your brother seemed to be unusual. But he took the title of king and high priest, Alexander Janaeus, and he faced internal conflicts from beginning to end. Hasidim, remember we talked about that again, that's the ones that just follow the law. Well, they were the Pharisees. And the Sadducees supported Alexander Janaeus. Okay. That was the one who that we fought. He inherited the kingdom from his brother, Aristobulus, who had imprisoned him, put him in the prison, and also lived for a year. He inherited the kingdom. And also, as a good Jewish boy would do, he followed the law. He married his brother's widow. And the interesting part of it is she was a Pharisee. So he inherited the kingdom, the brutal civil wars, and a wife. And there's a record in here, and it was something, anyway, I had to figure out how to tell this where it's not completely off-putting, but the Sadducees, again, supported Alexander Janaeus. They had a celebration of a victory over the Pharisees. Again, this is Jews fighting Jews. This is a civil war. And at the celebration, he crucified 800 Pharisees. I guess that was the entertainment. But they crucified the Pharisees. Again, internal civil war with that kind of brutality. And that's one where you have to trust God's plan, because there's not any of us sitting here who thinks that's the way we would have done it if we were trying to develop a plan. Nonetheless, that's what happened. And there were other things they did in different battles. There was a time when they took people to the beach. They killed a whole bunch of them in the battle itself, took the captives to the beach and killed them. And they forced some of them to watch cannibalism. They ate. So anyway, and that would instill fear in almost anybody, if not sickness. I always envisioned, we talk about the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the scribes, and I always envisioned that kind of like a family philosophical disagreement. It'd be like having, Republicans and Democrats at the Thanksgiving table. That was not what this was at all. I mean, they were, I underestimated the hatred and the viciousness with which this took place. And so reading that, again, it put me to thinking and to appreciating how God's plan has ended with us. Is that we had, instead of having 20,000 men get killed at once, and then 20,000 on the other side get killed, we had one divine human who died for us. So we didn't have to. So we don't have to. I should use present tense. Now he died. Janaeus died when he was besieging a city, for what it's worth, Ragaba. That's where the Arabs lived. He was killed. And actually, he wasn't killed. I take that back. He died of an illness, malaria. Had to go through a couple of sources to find out what that They didn't call it malaria back then. They didn't speak English for one thing, but he died from malaria, made worse by endless wars, endless fighting, and exhaustion, and heavy drinking. And by the way, heavy drinking shows up frequently in this history. I mean, remember we talked about that with Alexander, the same thing, Alexander the Great. And anyway, he died and left his wife that he had been married to his brother that had put him in jail. She was left as the ruler of the country, the ruler of Judea. That's one of three women. This is, again, a trivia question, but her name was Salome Alexandra, from 76 to 67 BC, one of only three females in Jewish history to rule over the country. The other you will have heard of, both of them, Deborah, and I think it's supposed to be Italia. Again, Italia was the one. It says something different on this piece of paper, but it was Italia. You know who that was? You know who her parents were? King Ahab and Queen Jezebel. That was her parents. And she usurped the crown or the throne. She was not the rightful heir. But that's Adelief. Now, back to Salome. She was a Pharisee. She was at the feast where they crucified 800 Pharisees. Anyway, her son was was appointed the high priest. She was the queen. She had already been named the queen when her first husband died, before he died, I mean. And her son was appointed as the high priest, and he favored the Pharisees. The thing that was notable, or that is notable under him, was that he reestablished the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin, you've heard us all talk about that, but that's the Supreme Jewish Legislative, Judicial, and the Religious Council of priests, scribes, and Pharisees, led by the high priest, which was Hyrcanus the second. Okay, back to Salome. During her reign was called the golden age of the Hasmonean history, because of it. They were independent, real independent. They had independence. They had highly productive agriculture. They had taken the valleys and the rich land around the Sea of Galilee and the valleys of the mountains up there, up through there, and had booming agriculture. In addition to that, they had booming commerce and relative tranquility for a period of time. I can't help but think that we all may need female leadership every once in a while to get things calmed down. So that's what happened there. They anyway, she died as the last leader of an independent nation of Judea. Independent being the word in caps. There were other leaders of Judea, but none of an independent Judea after that. Aristobulus the second was the younger son of Salome, and he wanted to be king after his mother's death. And so then it becomes Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, and I'm going to ask that question later. Both of them the second. They fought battles. Finally, Aristobulus defeated Hyrcanus near Jericho, forced him to give up his title as high priest. His mother was queen, and he was high priest. He wasn't both. Aristobulus after his mother's death, made him, Hyrcanus, give up the title of high priest. He took it on. He became both king and high priest, and supported by the Pharisees at this point in time. Okay, Hyrcanus and the second, Aristobulus the second, go back up. Simon's great-grandsons, and this leads to the next section eventually, but they became a pawns in a proxy war between Julius Caesar and Pompey, names you will recognize from your Western history course, the Western culture course. The deaths of Pompey in 38 BC and the death of Caesar in 44 BC and Roman civil wars temporarily relaxed Rome's grip on the Hasmonean kingdom, and with the back of the Parthians and Mark Antony, you remember that from English literature, right? Mark Antony and Augustus rapidly crushed the Harmonians after 103 years of service with semi-autonomy or complete autonomy. They were crushed. And we'll get to the Roman civil wars. We're going to talk about that in the coming weeks. But both of the brothers bribed Pompey. Again, this is part of the way they did business, but they bribed Pompey, the Roman general, to give them control, to give them the power. And they, it was interesting that Pompey, initially from afar, he chose Aristobulus as the leader. But when he returned from, he was in Syria, but when he returned from Syria, he felt like the older and weaker brother of the Hyrcanus would be a more reliable ally. And I think there's something to be learned from that. You know, pick your friends and look for loyalty. And according to him, look for weakness. So they, Aristobulus tried to deliver Jerusalem to Pompey. Pompey put a siege onto him. Aristobulus tried to give it to him without a fight, and the Pharisees, his supporters, wouldn't open the gates. And so they bombarded the gates and damaged the city, damaged the temple, and ended up that Aristobulus was taken to Rome. Was put in prison and killed. Anyway, we'll have more about the ending of the Hasmonean dynasty in future lessons on Rome. And I talked about a crucifixion. Evidently, that was a Roman form of punishment. You know, the Jews stoned, that was their form of capital punishment. But they had adopted this as their form of government, or their form of death penalty. And it evidently was pretty common. I think probably a lot of you have seen the pictures out of the books that show a calcaneus that's got a nail in it. And that was not uncommon. I was